Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week has been described as the future of Scottish comedy and performed stand-up everywhere from Toronto to Australia to his home in Glasgow. My favourite thing to learn is his debut show, Home Sweet Home, was officially the best reviewed of any Scottish stand-up at the Edinburgh Fringe, and I saw that show, so I guess we both win. And our guest is Christopher MacArthur Boyd.
Thank you very much for having me, Bobby, man. I would just like to say, yes, I've had the best reviewed Scottish stand-up show, The Fringe, 2019. But, you know, they missed a couple. When they were aggregating the scores, they missed a really bad one that would have brought me right down to about 17, 18th best reviewed. So it sounds good, but it's factually inaccurate.
Wow, way to come for my intro, but also that's some commitment to not accepting your own achievements. You're like, look, I've done the maths. I'm not all that.
No, I was very proud of that show, man. So it's cool when people dug it. But I know they're wrong.
And do you think that will be your whole career in comedy? You'll just be like, it doesn't matter how famous I get. These fuckers are all wrong. And one day they'll see, I'll crash and burn. Mm-hmm. I'll get real famous, then I'll crash and burn, and then they'll know.
I think it's very healthy to shit on yourself at every opportunity. You know, that's how you keep a good sense of...
confidence?
Yeah. Well, confidence is overrated, man, you know. I'm fed up with confident people.
Okay. So let's start off with a dating story then.
Okay.
Got one in mind?
Well, it's tricky to talk about dating because I've been in a long-term relationship for 4 years. And then immediately before that, I was in a long-term relationship of like 3 years. But I think about when I was a teenager, I was like absolutely off my nut in terms of like dating. Like I thought I was gay when I was 18 because the first time I ever tried to have sex with a girl, I couldn't get up. And she was lying there thinking, oh my God, I couldn't get up. She thought she must be ugly, but I thought, I came out to all my friends. Like, I'm gay now.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they were like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, who do you fancy? Like, what guys? And I was like, I can't think of any. And then, you know, I ended up going back to that girl and saying, hey, listen, I know I've been telling everybody I'm gay, but I'm up for giving it another bash. And then I had sex with her and I was like, okay, cool. I like girls.
This is so novel to me. This is a perspective I've never heard because I hear a lot of like straight people love to question anyone that's not straight and be like, oh, well, how are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many men have you fucked? How many do you need to for us to believe you? And then, of course, people on the other side are like, well, how do you know you're straight?
Yeah.
And they don't like that question. And you're here with...
just open to it. You know, I was listening to a lot of music and a lot of art, a lot of like... books written by gay people. I was like, I like the vibe. Yeah. I like the vibe. We're well dressed, very funny people. Tends to be, you know, the way I make stereotypes, but they're pretty good stereotypes. And I thought, yeah, maybe I'm gay. And then turned out I was just extremely nervous. And there's a difference.
I love that you were like, yeah, I'm not necessarily gonna try it, but I'll try out the label. I like.
I kissed a guy once, you know, and I was like, cool. Done a three-way pool type thing. Don't know if you've ever had anybody talk about the three-way pool in the podcast.
No, go ahead.
Just, you know, three people. Put your face in. One of them was a guy, one was a girl, and I was like, yeah, I think I prefer the girl part, you know?
That's not what I thought that would be. I was like, I thought it was going to be like a wingman situation.
No, it's just like three teenagers get drunk and just go for it.
Oh, interesting.
But that was when I was a teenager, you know, I don't get up to shit like that anymore.
So then you realise, you're like, okay, maybe I'm not gay then. And then what were things like from there? Were you really driven to, like, get into a relationship?
Well, I was telling my friends and they were like, you know, went to Magaluf with my friends, big kind of, it was kind of a lad's holiday, but it was co-ed, you know, there was like eight girls from my school. We all went on holiday together. And one of my pals, Scott, I had told him I was gay when I was steaming, like, 2 months before it. I was in a real bad mood when I was on holiday because I just don't like holidays like that. I wanted to read. Like, I'd brought, like, loads of books and shit to, like, a party holiday. And they were all making fun of me. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to stay in the hotel. That was the night everybody went skinny dipping. And I was like, fuck, I really wanted to have that kind of moment of, like, going skinny dipping. And one of my pals, Scott, was like, tomorrow night we will go. I was like, okay, that's interesting. I've told him I'm gay, but he wants to go skinny dipping. But we went out into the water, like strip, naked, running about in the water. And he was like, yeah, remember when you told me you were gay? I was like, yeah. He was like, I don't think you are. I was like, oh. He was like, that's why I'm comfortable, like, getting in the sea naked with you. And I was like, okay. I was just really confused, man. It sounds like it a bit.
He's clearly done a lot of analysis of that situation. Like, he had a whole narrative he'd gone through in his head, and it seemed like the most obvious one would not be that.
No, I don't think it was an obvious choice. It was weird, though, because then we're having this discussion in the Mediterranean Ocean. Mediterranean
still
sea,
naked.
Still naked at midnight, pretty drunk. And then on the beach, there was this girl getting fingered by this guy on, like, a deck chair. While he was fingering her, the guy was shouting, are you too gay? We were like, no, we're having a discussion.
We're not sure, we're figuring it out.
So it was, yeah, man, really confusing time. But things, when you're a teenager, are just so much more... I was going to say things are more dramatic. I guess things just get dramatic in a different way when you grow up a wee bit. You still have big feelings, but you can just take them a wee bit better, I think.
Yeah, and you know what I think is lovely about that time is, you know, if you do have, like, a good supportive friend group, there's a lot that people just roll with, you know, that you can, like, change what you identify as sexuality-wise. You can sort of be figuring out, like, what sort of traits you're attracted to in people and stuff like that, and everyone just goes with it. Whereas an adult, there's this expectation, okay, well, you're set now.
You're solidified, you know, you're not malleable anymore. Yeah, I think things are just a little bit more comfortable when you're a bit older, you know. I'm not, like, ancient, you know, I'm 28. But, you know, things are, I really prefer being alive now than I preferred to be alive when I was a teenager in terms of romance and shit like that, you know.
Well, that's it. It makes sense. I think it is real magic, though, like, the newness of that time, like, when people are figuring it out.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's why, yeah, that's why you've got me thinking about, like, that as kind of a privilege of, like, if you have the right people around you.
Oh, sure, yeah. And I was really lucky. My friends were really, like, I guess they knew me better than I knew myself, you know, because they were right. But, yeah, not dating, yeah, it was just so dramatic, man, you know. So now I'm going out with... I say, I don't really like even referring. Me and my girlfriend have this discussion, like, what do we refer to each other as? We've been going out for 4 years, lived together for 3 years. She moved from Australia to live with me. Like, it's pretty serious. So girlfriend and boyfriend seems a little bit juvenile. Do you know what I mean? So we're going for life partners. How do you feel about that? Your face twitched when I said that.
Why is the word life in there?
Just to differentiate it between, like, you know, cowboy partners
or your business associates.
Yeah, you know, we don't have a limited company between us, so we can. I like life partners because that's really what a good relationship is. It's, you're a team, you know what I mean? You're working together to make each other's lives better and you're partnering up. So I really like it. She thinks it's extremely cringe.
Okay, yeah. Well, so I've got an ally there. I think I'm realizing a, like, conflict in my own life in that I think I refer to other people's relationships as, like, oh, ask, like, how's your partner? And I think part of that is, like, I just always try and not assume gender.
Of course,
and
yeah,
so that's kind of become my catch-all even when I do know the gender.
Do you not think that it's kind of, when straight people say just partner, I kind of get pissed off because it kind of makes them sound more interesting than they really are? Like, we had a teacher in school and she would just refer to, her name was, like, Miss Martin or something. I don't know why I'm putting her on blast, right? But she would go, yeah, me and my partner. And everybody was like, ooh, it's a bit of mystery, you know? But it is hard because boyfriend, girlfriend.
Yeah, well, I guess it's a pretty disappointing mystery if they're just straight.
Exactly.
That's no gossip. I know what you mean. I know that some people are quite protective of that term. A friend of mine was saying that to me recently, actually, like, that a lot of my language is kind of quite non-binary.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I
tend to
great,
just
yeah.
not use gender labels, and I use, like, they, them, like, a lot more than most people would.
I try and do that when I'm comparing in comedy clubs, you know. I'll try and, not very good at comparing, but when I'm hosting a show, I, like, just, I don't know, it can be quite laddie, the circuit, you know. It can be quite, not a very encouraging space for women, do you know what I mean? So I try and, I really slipped up my first gig back there on Friday night. I accused the girl of lying about liking Metallica, which is the most basic bullshit male gatekeeping thing possible. And I asked her what her favourite song was, and she had a really good answer. I was like, fuck. I've really busted myself as a absolute wank. But you need to kind of criticise yourself. And
did you acknowledge it, though? Because yeah. I think that's the save.
Yeah, I went into it, and I kind of went into a character as, like, a wrestler who I pretend to be, and I kind of walk through every problem I've had in the set so far, and I kind of called myself out for being an arsehole for assuming that she didn't know, which is okay, I think. Hopefully I redeemed myself.
No, that makes sense. What I was going to say earlier is that I've realised in this moment that I say partner about other people's relationships, but I tend to, I think, say, like, girlfriend or boyfriend mm-hmm. when it's people I'm with.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's, like, a part of me that's still a bit immature, and, like, back when you're a kid and you're like, oh, imagine having... And I'm still using the labels that I wanted back then.
Yeah, totally, man.
Mm.
But really, I think I just had such unpleasant experiences as a teenager with boyfriends and girlfriends that I'm trying to be like, no, I have a life partner now. And I would like, I mean...
I'm an adult still trying to live in the Skins alternative reality and you've locked that shit away.
Yeah, no, I don't want to be a Skins person anymore.
It's maybe the better choice. And so your relationship now, tell me about how you met.
So I was at the Edinburgh Fringe, not the show you've seen that is the best reviewed Scottish comedy stand-up hour of that year. It was two shows before that, and obviously it's very...
It was one of the best that I saw that year. Does that
thank you very much.
Better?
Yeah, I like that. I also feel like it was the best Scottish one, but yeah, I don't really like being hemmed in as just a Scottish person. What was I even talking about? How did I meet my girlfriend? Yeah, well, she was doing the lights and the sound for a Fringe run that I'd done with my friend Roscoe McClelland, and we would kind of take turns with the show. So I would do 25 minutes, and then he would do 25 minutes. And it was a very small, hot room. Like, she had to drink... It was an attic in Counting House in Edinburgh, and she had to drink, like, a litre of water every hour because it was just so hot. There was only one fan, and that was on the comedian. So she was just, like, we were just roasting. We were doing really badly. Like, sometimes we'd only have like five people in for the show, and I would just go sit up the back with her while Roscoe was taking his turn. I don't know, I just really liked her. Obviously, working in, do I call it showbiz, but you know, in the entertainment, the arts, working in the arts, you don't want to be too disrespectful or flirty to like women that you work with. But I had a kind of inkling that she liked me. Well, she kind of makes fun of me for how unsubtle the hints she dropped were that she liked me. I think she was literally like sitting on a bench in a beer garden with me, looking in my eyes going like, yeah, I mean, I would like to be your girlfriend. Like, that was how obvious she had to make it that she liked me. I just can't take it.
And did you even not pick that up? You're like, oh, interesting hypothetical. Yeah, let's discuss, like, who else you would be with.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing to say to someone. You know, that's really made me feel better about my life. But then, you know, I liked her a lot as well, but I think I just came out of a relationship and stuff, and I thought maybe she was just trying to make me feel better. But we hooked up last night at the Fringe. Then right after the Fringe, she was like, I'm going to go on a tour of Europe. I was like, come to Glasgow first. So she came to Glasgow for like a couple of days. It was amazing. My mum and dad were on holiday at the time, so conditions were perfect. She came around to my mum and dad's house, and we kind of spent 3 days together. Then she went off on this gallivanting tour of Europe, like Berlin and Barcelona and all these places, staying in hostels. But we were like texting all the time. She came to the end of her kind of backpacking tour, and she was like, I can either go to Hungary or I can come back to Glasgow. I'm sure some small part of her regrets that she never got to see the Hungarian sights, but, you know, I convinced her to come to Glasgow, and then we were together for 3 days. I think she met my mum and dad at that point, so it really picked up. Then she went back to Australia. So I went to Australia to do, like, the comedy festivals there, like Perth and Adelaide. She lived with me in Perth for the month. So we went straight for dating to...
And were you booked in on anything, or did you just know you were going to go and then you're like, oh, shit, I should actually do some work?
Well, there was this thing. There's a story. When she came back for the 3 days instead of going to Hungary and she came to Glasgow, I was, like, I had to say goodbye to her because we were at the train station and she was going to get the train from Glasgow down to London. And I had to, like, kiss her goodbye at the train station, which is, like, a pure old-fashioned thing. But I was, like, crying and shit, man. I was, like, I'd met somebody that, like, meant a lot to me. And I really liked them. And they were just, like, leaving. And I was, like, fuck. So, you know, I like to think I'm quite emotionally available with people. But didn't know how to say what I wanted to say. So I just got, like, a wee note in my back pocket. And I wrote, this is so cheesy, but I wrote, "We'll meet again, don't know where, don't know when," which is unfortunate because that's became like the Brexit anthem. But at the time, it was just like a nice thing. So I kind of put that when I was kissing her, like put it in one of her pockets. And then she read this. I was like looking in your pocket. That's so cheesy, but I love shit like that, man.
I think that's adorable. But you were saying earlier that you've had a lot of feedback from women where they love that you're emotionally available.
I wouldn't say they love it. They just notice it and go, yeah, maybe they like it.
I think they probably do.
Let's just clarify that I never said women love it when I because I feel like that's like, I don't know. I would never say that. They do like it, though.
I don't care. I'm up for encouraging it because, like I said earlier, I think a lot of it is that it's novel to people mm-hmm. for men to be open about their feelings.
Yeah.
And as such, it then becomes attractive.
Totally, yeah.
And so I'm very happy to promote that as a way to get men to talk about how they're feeling. If that's the incentive you need, take it.
Well, I'm just, you know, I kind of struggle with ideas like flirting, you know, because if I like someone romantically or platonically, that's how I show that I like someone, is I'm just open towards them. And if I don't like someone, I like close myself off. So I think sometimes for girls I've been going out with, you know, they're just not used to it. And they're like, oh my God, this guy's so open, this is cool. But really it's just, that's how I show that I'm comfortable with someone.
Yeah, but I guess that makes sense. If you're not used to guys being like that, then it feels very intimate. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, this is really kicking off to something. And maybe that's why it partly moves so quick.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you're sort of surprised that when people like you. So
yeah,
when they do, you're like, oh, yeah, in a relationship straight away.
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, I've got a lot better with my self-image, I suppose. But I do find it very strange when people are attracted to me. And I kind of struggle with stuff like that. But I think that's, is that normal?
Yeah.
I think most people are like, I mean, it's kind of hard to phrase this. I was about to say, do you not think it's normal when most people don't think people could be attracted to them? But now I was thinking, is that normal? I don't know.
I think that is the majority of people,
yeah.
Absolutely. And even for me, I've realised I've got like a area of negligence where I've worked on my confidence a lot
mm-hmm.
in general and
yeah.
to like be able to live with myself.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've not worked on is like actually thinking I can be attractive in a relationship way. So
yeah.
I know why my friends like me. I know mm-hmm. why I'm good to work with.
Yeah.
I don't despise the sight of myself in a mirror anymore. But I've realized even doing this show, I was mm-hmm. like, I also have a mental health show. I was like, I didn't think it would be like the funny dating podcast
yeah.
where I'd have all the like mid-interview like sort of existential crises. But I'm learning a lot, and that's a big one. It's
mm-hmm.
like I need to work on actually believing
yeah
that I can be attractive in
sure.
that situation. And I think maybe part of it is for you know, some people would describe you as a serial monogamist, like in, you know, long term
sure.
after long term relationships.
Yeah.
And perhaps you get the practice in because
mm-hmm.
you're around someone every day that stays.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I do think, you know, I read this thing when I was a teenager, when I was like 17, and, you know, feeling unlovable, but then also the reality of like, maybe people did like me and I was just shutting them out or something, but I read this thing that was like advice for teenage guys, and it was like, listen, don't try and get 17-year-old you laid, like try and get 21-year-old you laid. So just work on being like a cool, interesting person who has like skills and interests and hobbies and can talk about stuff. And then, you know, you put the work in and then you'll be happier later on. And I think maybe that's, I don't know if that's good advice, because now I'm myself, imagine myself as like a comedian. You know, I'm quite happy with my job and my interests and stuff. And I can talk about lots of different stuff, but I do still struggle with the idea. Like I've never been on a dating app because I just don't feel like my appeal can be summed up visually. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like if I went on it, people would be like, ugh.
That is the politest way I've ever heard someone call themselves ugly.
I mean, ugly's too far. I just feel like, you know, I think you need to get to know me a wee bit. And I think that's kind of impossible to get across on, like, Tinder or Hinge.
Yeah.
Not that I would know, because I've never done it.
Yeah, no, I think there is some truth to that. As much as the apps actively try and, you know, mm-hmm. work in the bios and they add features like you can, which part of me is like so cynical about it at times. So like on Tinder now, you can like put in keywords mm-hmm. for interests of yours. Right, and I'm like, yeah. Were people that lazy that they wouldn't do sentences? So you had to give them keywords.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. But then, yeah, there is the argument of how many people are actually reading that versus just swiping back and forth.
Totally, yeah. So that's like the last kind of 8 years. I was only single for like 6 months of it or 3 months of it. We had to kind of long distance relationship stuff when she was in Australia. Because I went to Australia to live with her for a month, but then I was in Adelaide. She wasn't in Adelaide. And then I went back to Scotland and she was in Australia for like 6 months of long distance relationship. And that was really hard. But we got out the other end of it. I think long distance relationships are okay if there is like an end in sight.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've known some people who've been like, yeah, we're just going to do it long. And they don't plan on coming here and I don't plan on going there, but we're going to. And I'm like, you have fucked it. No offense if that's your life, but you have fucked it.
It's a real commitment. I think you have to be a particular kind of person. The only time I've ever been in a long-term relationship, I realized it was over when I think it was like probably around the same time. It was like 6 months or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I actually don't know if I can wait that long.
Yeah.
Initially, I was like, oh, well, I'll see if I can do it. I'm sure I can wait and blah, blah, blah. We can figure this out. And then I realized at a certain point, for me, the countdown clock became a bit of a challenge.
Sure.
And then I was like, I can do it, as opposed to it being like, do I want to?
Totally, man. Yeah, long distance relationships are hard because you're just kind of, there's also just so much pressure when you actually see them again, you know?
Yeah.
It's really scary, but I'm glad we did it, you know? As long as it's like leading up to something, I think it's okay. You know, I tried to do a bit of stand-up about this, but it's almost like too much, I think. But like, it is a lot of pressure when your girlfriend moves from Australia to Glasgow to live with you, because quality of life just drops. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be as good a boyfriend as the son, mm-hmm. as it could be a son, you know? So, you know, she's made a sacrifice to come and live with me. It's been good. Mm-hmm. About 6 months ago, her mum and dad were trying to convince her because, you know, in their news, we are Plague Island just now, you know? And they're just looking at all these statistics of, like, Britain and Scotland being, like, totally ravaged by COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And our mum and dad were like, come back to Australia. And bring Christopher if you want. We'll pay for it. And, you know, part of me wishes I went.
It is a really weird situation to have that. I've had that quite a bit in the pandemic where people from other countries are worried about us while our own government doesn't seem to be as much.
100%, yeah. It's a scary time, but it seems if we're coming out of it. I feel so bad for my single friend, you know, because obviously living close quarters with my girlfriend for 14 months has had its difficulties, but it's been an amazing opportunity to really get to know somebody, whereas some of my friends, like, you know, who are into dating, you know, they're kind of shaggers, and then you can't do that. The last, like, year, especially in Glasgow, it's been in total lockdown, so I really feel for them, man.
Yeah. I had a brief bit of dating when things lifted a bit last year, and mm-hmm. it was like, it felt very end of the world, where I was like, I feel I need to pick one of these people before we go back into winter.
Totally, yeah. It is the end of the world, man.
And I thought I'd be cooler. Do you know what I mean? I think when I was little, I had a whole idea of, like, if it ever came to it, I'd get a bunker, all of my friends would move in, and we'd just wait out and see what happens.
Turns out you just really work on your podcast.
Yeah. In reality, it's just me sat working, like, in front of a computer all day and then having Zoom calls at that same computer.
Yeah, I always thought the end of the world would be, like, you know, sitting on a beach, an atomic bomb goes off in the distance, and, like, the hot air, like, starts coming towards you as the mushroom cloud erupts, and you just turn to the person you're with, and you're like, I've never told you this, but I've been in love with you my whole life. And they turn at you and they go, I've been in love with you my whole life. And you're like, just embrace. And then just as you kiss, you get turned into skeletons. But because you were kissing as you died, you'll kiss forever, you know? And it turns out, mostly for me, it's been scrolling through Deliveroo. Just try to find Chinese's that I haven't had five times this week already, which is a struggle.
Yeah, I love that we've thought about this in such depth. But no, definitely. And I'm thinking what my equivalent is. Probably like sitting at home shouting at the news.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Yeah, it has been kind of a weird thing that's happened with me. My girlfriend is always struggling with self-image, but then through my job, you know, becoming number one Scottish stand-up show at the 2019 Fringe, you know, like having some kind of degree of, I like myself because I'm good at my job, losing my job for 14 months and like having no, like struggling with a sense of identity and having to kind of reinvent myself as, I don't want to say a good boyfriend, but that's kind of all I was for 14 months, was a partner, a life partner for my girlfriend, and like just being better to live with. And like her career has been like taken off. Like she's been promoted in her work. She works like 9 to 6 for like a video games company. And like I just haven't had anything. So it's kind of going from, maybe there was more emphasis on my career to start with before the pandemic. And like she was just like, yeah, I've got a job as well. That's bad, but that's kind of how I saw it. But now it's like she is like the breadwinner. And I was like a house husband until literally this weekend. So it was weird to kind of reinvent your sense of self.
Yeah, but good that you were able to throw yourself into that, because I think a lot of people would...
It took her a long time.
And did she feel you did a good job? Were you exhausting in your pursuit of perfect...
No, I just mean like I was like cooking for her a lot more and like just trying to work around her. I don't think I did a great job, but just in terms of self-image, it's been hard to... What are the things about myself that I like that I have not to do in my job, you know?
Mm.
So,
and particularly something like comedy, it does bleed into your life so much.
Mm.
And then I'd imagine, like, even in social situations, you're around a lot of other comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not performing, but you all kind of want to be the funny one in the room at the same time.
I really don't, you know, like in a backstage at a comedy club. I mean, I'm sure other comedians will also tell you that I'm not a big laugh backstage, but you know, I'm really much a... When I was a teenager, I was, like, you know, telling all my friends I was gay and stuff. Like, I would also just, like, get really drunk and, like, fucking smash a vase at a house party. Or, you know, I don't know why. I was going to say another vase-related anecdote. I, like, pushed a vase out a window and it smashed. Or, like, went to this girl's house and, like, fucking jumped through her back garden's decking. And my feet just went through the wood. And everybody was like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? And I just had a pure desire to be, like, the centre of attention. But now, when I do stand-up, I have, like, 20 minutes of undivided attention. So, like, if I'm backstage or if I'm, like, sociable with people, I've already purged my need to have that kind of self-attention. Mm-hmm. Like, so I just kind of... I'm a lot more laid-back than most comedians in a dressing room, and I don't have that need to entertain people, you know?
Well, that sounds quite healthy, definitely.
Well, yeah, but then you know, you lose it, and then you're like, well, yeah. Now I need attention. How am I going to get it? Apparently, I started doing the Twitch streams, you know, but it was unhealthy for a while. But
tell me what you've been playing on Twitch.
Recently, well, I mean, it's one of these things where in December I went completely mental. I think a lot of people went crazy in December, just something to do with Christmas and like really being 9 months into the pandemic. I went crazy, just like stopped Twitching, stopped streaming. Started twitching like my eye, so I've came back to it because I really do enjoy it and I like being on Twitch. That's a very strange kind of relationship you have with people on that, where what?
Yeah, I've not engaged with it. So if the listeners are unfamiliar, you stream yourself gaming, so, and they can hear you, right? Can they see you as well?
So when you're on Twitch for my stream, it's like a video of what I'm playing on my TV, and then there's a wee camera version of me so you can see me, and I'm speaking on a microphone, you can hear me, and it's kind of like having a pal, because I remember being like quite lonely when I was a teenager and I didn't have like podcasts or like Twitch streams, so I would just like listen to DVD commentaries to have like someone to listen to, which is like so fucking pathetic. But you have a kind of strange parasocial relationship with people in there. It can be quite hurtful when people stop watching you, you know, if you have like a fan or like a viewer. I call my fans the CMB hive. So it's like, yeah, I've lost people as viewers, and it's really, you know, hurts.
Well, it sounds like that became like the replacement a bit for you.
Yeah.
And like in, you know, in a comedy show, it's different. Like you can't see most of the audience. No. People can leave out the back you might not know.
Or totally.
Maybe they're going to the loo.
I didn't realise how much I liked that, how impersonal stand-up is. Like, I hope he's enjoyed that. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Sometimes they love it, but nonetheless, you're just walking right out of the building and you don't see them ever again. Great, you know? Whereas Twitch is like, you get really invested in people. I know this isn't necessarily dating, but I do feel like it's a type of relationship, you know? with the people who watch it.
Yeah, but also all this stuff counts, right? You know, like you need other social interactions. Like one of the things that I'm really against is when people try and put their whole life into a relationship. They're like, and I think maybe men are a bit more guilty of this, where they're like, oh, if only I have a girlfriend. And then it's maybe not a surprise when they expect her to like emotionally prop them up and cook and clean for them and totally, do all these things. And it's like, oh, well, this is, you wanted someone to fix your life and she's maybe realizing that and trying to look after you. But it's not a quality.
No, that's a really bad way of being a person. I know guys like that and it's, you know, I'm probably get away at doing it a wee bit in my life. But yeah, man, it's...
Well, part of it is, you need those other relationships. Like, do you have good friends? And I mean, I've, as someone that's been single for most of my adult life and yet had many short relationships, I've had it plenty of times where I'm the friend that they stop speaking to as much when they get into a relationship. And I'm very vocal about it these days.
Well, it's bullshit, you know?
Yeah, because... also I've learned a great tactic, which is you just make friends with the girlfriend and then they get competitive because they're like, oh, he's my friend. And it works great.
That's class.
And so you were telling me about being together through the pandemic, things you've learned. Do you have any examples?
Yeah, I would say that thing I said of just realising it's not the me show, you know, and she's a full-fledged person. With her own life and career and goals and ambitions and stuff. And just because I'm the travelling clown doesn't mean that it's all about me. Do you know what I mean? That's been good. And also, you know, I think it's important to have a sense of self that isn't tied to your job or, and especially not tied to your partner. Because then, fuck, imagine I lost my job and my girlfriend. I would just be, you know, a sandcastle man. You know, just like being turned into nothing by the sea. So... yeah, I think is that a message? Is that a lesson I've learned? Yeah, I would say. People say nobody's going to love you unless you love yourself. And that's not true. Because people will love you in spite of how you feel about yourself. But I feel like you don't need to love yourself, but you do kind of need to know yourself.
You know, maybe you don't always have to be that mad on yourself going in, but I think it is something you probably have to learn for long term, because if nothing else, it's kind of like the love you might receive will fall on deaf ears.
Sure,
if there's nothing that you actually believe is worthy about yourself, you'll be like, they're lying. Why do they keep saying these nice things that aren't true?
Yeah, and there's something, I think it's in a song I read or something, a song I listened to once, and it was like, maybe in a book, and it was, love is seeing yourself in someone else. Which is quite narcissistic, I think. But if you don't like yourself, but you like this person because you see yourself in them, you can't like them very much either. Does that make sense?
Yeah. it's a bit cryptic, but I'm working on
it. Cryptic MacArthur point.
I think there's definitely something to that of, like, you know, maybe if you learn to love somebody else that deeply, it'll help you learn how to do it with yourself.
Yeah. But I think the issue is that most guys are just kind of unwilling to examine themselves or to be emotionally available. So, I mean, the suicide... I don't know why I'm fucking bringing up suicide rates, but...
No, we can talk about that.
You know, it's like, I think a lot of guys just don't know how to express themselves in a healthy way, and it just leads to fucking anger and sadness and shit. So we really need to, as a society, just fucking let guys say how they feel, you know?
And I remember that being a big thing for me to realise that I used to think of myself as really emotional, I think, for most of my life. And now I realise it's just like I'm honest about it. And a lot of people aren't. And so, you know, I'd still get it sometimes where I have a conversation with someone and I'm like, I sound so turbulent. But it's just because I'm not saying I'm fine.
Yeah,
it's just like, no, that actually is my day-to-day. Yeah. Like, particularly in the pandemic, smaller things can make a bigger difference because we were all a bit untethered.
Totally.
And so a big thing for me to realise was actually how intimidating a lot of people find it when you are emotionally open.
Well, that's the other side of it, because we were saying earlier on, I think girls that I went out with have kind of responded to that in me. But, you know, it also puts off a lot of people.
You know? Well, here's the thing. I'm trying to think, is there a better word than intimidating? But I think that's how some people react. And
a lot of people don't like it. You know?
Yeah, and I used to think for a long time, and a lot of time it is like men policing each other of like, no, we don't talk about that stuff. push it down like the rest of us. And I think part of that comes from, you know, if I talk about having a, you know, a difficult time, maybe they'll relate to it and they're like, no, I'm busy trying to, you're pushing it back up. Why are you doing this? And also that, yeah, there is an element of policing of like what we do and don't talk about. And actually realizing like that when you do that kind of get that kind of backlash, that's the real reason.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you're actually doing.
Well, it's so sad because one thing I've noticed being at comedy clubs and stuff, and you know, can be quite laddie backstage, etc. When you're speaking to like quite a macho guy, someone who's like, you know, unwilling to be emotionally available, if it's just you and them one-on-one, they do seriously open up. But as soon as it's like two or three, it's just fucking unbearable, you know. Like they're just, it's just a fucking dick measuring contest. But I've always found I've always got on with like really kind of, do I use the term alpha male? Because it's bullshit. But those types of guys, you know, violent guys I went to school with, like really big guys I went to school with, really muscular dudes, really tough, they would always get on well with me because there's just like no threat to them. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm quite a wee guy. And I'm quite just like goofy and open with them. So like they would always get on well. But then in a group situation, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe you kind of balance them out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so one thing you mentioned there, which I will start wrapping up in a minute, but you mentioned about your height.
Mm-hmm.
And the first ever guest on the show, actually the last in-person interview I've done, back in 2019.
Maisie.
This one, yeah. Maisie. You know, she's quite tall. And so that's a big thing for her in dating of like, you know, wanting someone taller than her. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the interview, she sort of got a bit worried about, does this sound really like, you know, critical and judgmental? And she's like, actually, it's not that I have a problem with people that are smaller. She's like, I have a problem with feeling too tall as a woman. And if a guy is smaller than me, that will really trigger that. So tell me, give me the other side. So you are in a relationship with a woman.
So
taller.
Yeah, my girlfriend's taller than me. I've only had one girlfriend. I've only had one sexual partner who was shorter than me. And the rest of them have been tall. I don't know. It's not like a fetish. I'm not like, oh, I love giant women. And my girlfriend, you know, she's average height and I'm below average height. It doesn't really bother me. It looks stupid, you know? Ben Brady does a great bit about it. You're in a happy relationship with someone, but even if I see a couple and it's like a short guy and a tall girl, I'm like, fucking hell, that's funny. You know, and that's my life.
It's crazy how ingrained that is, though, isn't it? Because we know it's bullshit. Mm-hmm. And yet it's just so normalised.
Yeah.
That because that's pretty much the only thing we ever see, then anything else looks wrong.
Yeah. But, you know, you got, I was going to say you got guys like Tom Cruise fighting the good fight, but I really don't think he is fighting any good fights these days. But I also think it's kind of like, look how well I'm doing, man. I've got a tall girlfriend and she doesn't care, so there must be other good things about me that don't put her off, you know? So I get a kind of kick out of it. I know a lot of girls are against it, or some girls are against it. You know, it's up to them. It's their personal prerogative. It can be frustrating, you know? You kind of... One thing I really... I mean, you don't want to criticise any women's choices, but I really get annoyed when I see a very short girl with a really tall guy. I see it quite a lot, and I'm just like...
Why is that like, oh, they've stole one of mine?
Yeah. I mean, that feels kind of some kind of segregation that I'm in favour of. Sounds really dodgy. Just nobody's willing to, I mean, nobody's willing to talk about the whole kind of height issue.
Well, there is something where there's a big height gap. Mm-hmm. So I've been with a lot of women. So I'm 6'3".
Sure.
So I'm a foot between us, right?
Yeah.
And not on purpose, but I just seem to end up dating a lot of women that are significantly smaller than me. And, you know, there is an inconvenience to it sometimes.
Sure, yeah.
Without going into too much details.
I'm trying to think about the details.
Look at you pondering. You're like, no, I climb up her, no problem.
Yeah, now I've got a copy of the Yellow Pages that I take everywhere. That's a real assist.
So I think there can be that element of it as well, but really it just doesn't matter. You know, the same-sex equivalent is wanting to be the same height.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, like it's not, I wouldn't say it's as widespread, but there are some people who want to be really similar, height.
Well,
and I guess that's sort of, it's the convenience thing of like with us,
Well, people say like, you know, you want your face to be symmetrical. So I guess it's just an extension of that. you know, you just want a very symmetrically pleasing aesthetic look for when you're walking down the street with someone.
Yeah, that makes it sound more narcissistic. There is someone I know, though, and he loves to play a game. Brothers or partners? And it's real creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like the sense of that.
But yeah, there definitely is a thing where sometimes people want to look really similar. But, you know, you get that with straight people as well.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm a bit guilty of that. You know, me and my girlfriend went on our first hill walking holiday together. And that's her kind of, I kind of go for a kind of, you know, I used to be in punk bands and heavy metal. And I like skinny jeans and kind of indie shit. And she's kind of more, it's not really like subcultural in the slightest. She doesn't have any tattoos or anything. But I've kind of started noticing myself, like, oh yeah, I wear a walking boot, or I'll wear a cagoule. And I'm just like, I don't think, yeah, I don't know. You kind of naturally just want to match them a wee bit so it doesn't look weird. But you kind of feel like a little part of yourself is being subsumed.
Interesting. And do you think you're, like, you talked about being very open in dating situations. Do you think you're good at boundaries when you're in the relationship? Or do you tend to merge with somebody a bit too much?
Well, yeah, maybe I'm a wee bit guilty of poor boundaries and stuff. No, I don't know. I don't really understand the concept. Maybe that's when you know you're really fucked with boundaries, when you're like, what are boundaries, actually? I try and be really good, but, you know, I'm a crazy person, so I'm sure I've had my issues with that.
Also, I guess you have the shortcut of, like, going around touring. So it's like, it's easier to have boundaries when you're not together.
Oh, do you mean like just spending too much time with someone and taking up their whole life? Yeah. No, I'm pretty good at it. I like to have my own life, you know, and comedy's great for that because I'm on trains and hotels and shit, like halfway across the country. I love texting her and phoning her when I'm away, but I like the kind of having my own space and stuff, you know, that's nice.
The lone wolf of comedy.
I wouldn't say I was a lone wolf at all. I'm more like a lone otter or something. Do you know what I mean? Just kind of playing about in a stream, bashing shells with like little rocks and shit. But
breaking vases.
Yeah. Smashing up vases when I was a teen. But I think I'm pretty good at retaining my own sense of self. But I have not. Maybe it's just because the last 14 months has been so intense that I've noticed a wee bit of my...
Yeah, you're like, what is space? what is not being in the same room all the time?
Well, she's working 9 to 6 the whole, you know, most of the week, so I'm in one room, she's in the other room. We only have 2 rooms. But that's been one way of kind of delineating our lives. Mm. And I've had to find shit.
Because otherwise you get to the end of the day and you're just like, oh, what have you been? Oh, well, I saw a bird out the window. I was with you. I also saw that bird.
No, yeah, I've been going on big long walks during the day, which sounds sad, like an old person just going for big long walks in the park, but that's what I've been doing. And
as long as you're listening to podcasts, you know, prop up my industry.
Oh, yeah, sure. I'll listen to a couple of podcasts and listen to my own podcast. But mostly just listen to the fucking weird music and walk in, listen to podcasts, and then I can go home and go, oh, I genuinely, like, I saw a cool duck at the park. I saw a coot with a wee cool black duck with a mask. You know, I've bought a wee book about birds because I'm getting right out of them. So pathetic, man.
No, I love it. It's great.
Sorry, I smoked a big cigarette. I don't know what I called it. Big. I smoked a massive cigarette before I came in here, so my throat's a wee bit croaky.
All right, well, we're wrapping up now. For you, Luke.
A massive cigarette, man. It was 4 foot long.
Is that why you were here early? You were like, I need some time.
I was out there for 20 minutes and then I got halfway through it and I went, I'm going to, yeah. But thanks so much for having me, Bobby. I really appreciate it.
No, of course. Well, we're not quite done yet because we've got to set our rule of the game each. So do you have something in mind you try and live by in dating or relationships? I haven't thought of mine either.
Mm.
I have to think of a new one every time.
Yeah, well, I always think, I don't know if it's a rule, but definitely there's a Bright Eyes song, To Love and To Be Loved. And I think that's what relationships are about. It's about knowing someone totally and being known by someone. And I think that's kind of, you know, it's not great for dating. You know, dating should probably be more about like having fun, but that's why I don't date, because I don't like having fun. I like being very...
Yeah, I think that's a really good one though, because, you know, it's often the stuff that's like unexamined or like tiptoed around is the stuff that ultimately breaks up a relationship.
100%, yeah. So,
and I've not thought of one, so I'm just going to give a silly one, which is, fake tattoos, really good these days. You can get them. They look very convincing. So you don't necessarily have to do what you do, permanent one for a girl.
Dude, I don't know why. Oh, yeah. Oh, you've seen my heart tattoo?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. We should have spoken about that. I got a tattoo for
it. No, we can speak about it now. This is what I'm doing. No, it's like me explaining my work.
Yeah.
Like you did in the comedy show. This is what I'm doing where I haven't thought of anything, so I'm shifting it back onto you, proving that I've actually done some research and I'm not entirely unprepared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a tattoo when I was 18 for this girl, my first girlfriend, first real girlfriend. She broke my virginity, by the way. And I got a tattoo for her, which is kind of fucked up of me.
So how did that conversation go?
I didn't tell her.
Wait, hold on. So this was your idea?
Yeah, I got it. I got a heart done, and then I showed her it, and she was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, yeah, it's for you. That's mental.
And she said,
that's really unhealthy behaviour. I said to the tattoo guy when I was getting it done, this guy who knows my dad, the tattoo artist, I said, can you put a little T above the heart? And he was like, what's the T for? I was like, oh, it's my girlfriend's name starts with T. And he was like, I'll tell you what, if you come back here in 3 months and you're still together, I'll do the T for free. And I never went back.
Wow. He knew more than you did.
It seems like everybody in my life knows me better than I know myself when I was that age. I think I've got a wee bit better at it about knowing myself, but yeah.
I love that tattoo artist / medium. I want one of those.
Yeah, no, he was very wise. I think he'd seen a lot of people. He'd done a lot of teas, a lot of initials on people, and then they come back and go, can you cover that up with a dragon? Because she left.
I love that. And yeah, and for the listeners, it's an anatomically correct heart. You've really committed to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite where the heart should be. It's just away from the nipple.
Mm.
Like, it should be over the nipple. But the guy was like, it really hurts getting a tattoo on your nipple because it's like, you know, a little tiny needle jagging you and then blood comes out. You don't want that on your nipple. So move it over a wee bit. But I've seen some people have a heart tattoo and they've got it right in the middle of their chest, and that's not what it is.
Well, I mean, there you go. That's the takeaway from all of this. If you're going to do it, maybe that's the rule of the game. If you're going to get a heart tattoo, get it in the right place.
Get it where it
is. Don't embarrass yourself.
No, don't embarrass me.
All right, we will wrap up there. Thanks a lot, man.
Cheers. Have a great time.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.